Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is the host, Travis Loop. Very excited to be talking to one of my friends and colleagues north of the border, north of the U.S. border, up in Canada. I'm joined by Indra Maharajan. He is the Director of Innovation, Technology, and Alternative Delivery at Ontario Clean Water Agency, based in Toronto. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. A little bit of nasty weather, but it's all good.
Yeah, well, I'm glad. I know we talked a while ago about catching up and chatting on a podcast. It's long overdue. Glad we finally made it happen. Really excited to hear about some of the things happening with your agency there in Ontario, the Toronto area, and hear a little bit more about your background in Pakistan and Nepal. So, could you kind of just start out and give folks a bit of a summary of Ontario Clean Water Agency and what the focus of your work is?
Right. So prior to 1995, Ontario Clean Water Agency used to be a part of the Ministry of Environment in Ontario with the objective of operating water and wastewater treatment plants. And, through the deregulation of the market, AQUA was created as an arm's length to the provincial government with the business model, so we don't get any funding from the government per se. We operate on a competitive environment in the local market and operate about 600 plus water wastewater systems on behalf of the municipal clients here in Ontario, Canada. So we are the largest operator of the water wastewater system. The second largest are the municipalities themselves. So we have few big systems and lot of medium and small size systems. As you know, Ontario is very big in a geographical footprint. Sometimes we drive 300 kilometers or 3 hours to reach between the two facilities. So it's a vast geographical area we cover. We have about 800 operations and support services staff. So my role is within the engineering, capital, and support services. We have 600 people, frontline staffs, operating these plants all across the province within 10 regions. And technically, the support services basically supports our operations to find efficiencies and savings and optimization in their daily job. So I started as an energy program manager, supported my operations team and colleagues to find and drive efficiency and conservation within the operations of the water wastewater systems, and progressed my career and recently became a director of innovation, technology, and alternate delivery. So I really love my job because, as I said, I got to introduce new innovative technology processes and thought process and methodology throughout the regular job that our operations team does, so that we can create the value and an efficient system for our municipal clients.
The timing of our podcast worked out well because you just recently received this promotion. So congratulations on that. That's awesome.
Thanks,
Travis. I'm really interested in digging into these areas of innovation, technology, alternative delivery. And I know one of your big focus areas has been on energy efficiency and energy generation. I'm wondering if you could just talk about that a little bit and kind of how that area is changing, especially right, just in the past few years and almost moment by moment now.
Right. So as you know, water wastewater sector has a lot of potential, but the key barriers are financial barriers. And sometimes what we have typically seen in Ontario and across Canada is that a little bit change in a favorable regulatory policies drives a lot of things in our sector. In Ontario, starting 2010 or 2009, there has been a big push around energy efficiency and conservation programs by the local hydro utilities. And coming from that side of the market, when I joined water wastewater, I always assumed that they must have been doing a lot of work, but you know, needless to say, they have been doing a really good job, but there was many more that can be done. So you know, when I started here, we started with basic, you know, energy efficiency measures such as retrofitting aeration blowers, which are the major source of energy consumption, controls, behavioral changes and operational changes through capacity education and capacity building. Then we started looking at some of the energy generation opportunities such as typically solar, you know, photovoltaic system, CHPs, combined heat and power, a little bit of you know, inline turbines, biogas, waste heat recovery, and those. But the program, the conservation programs, which provides incentives on the energy savings, was a big driver to these energy projects. And also, with a lot of work we have done, we were able to share the information with a lot of municipality and municipal clients and decision makers. The owners of the system is municipal water wastewater systems in the province of Ontario consumes about 40 to 80% of the total energy consumption for the municipality. And that's a big cost.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, looking at the projects happening down in the United States, we are following you guys all the time. But needless to say, with the unique climatic conditions and, you know, densities and geographic spread, you know, it was slow in coming. But in last 5-6 years, we have done a lot of work. And now it's like a self-driving program that everybody knows where the energy savings are, what's the value of the energy savings. And we have also trained our operation staff to be energy champions so that, you know, they can identify the opportunity, they can come up with the idea, and we corporately, we support them implement those ideas, do some checks and balances, and then quantify the savings, apply to the funding and incentives. So it has changed a lot. And instead of, we started like, you know, corporately pushing for these initiatives, and now it's a self-driven initiative to the larger extent. We are just here to support the entire operation team. So I consider that as a big achievement as agency for us, and the results speak for itself. So it's a really, it has been a really nice journey for the last 5 years.
That's very interesting to hear that now that the incentives are there, that momentum is in place, and it's kind of now just a standard part of doing business, and it's that train is just headed down those tracks, and it's part of everything you're doing, basically.
That is correct, Travis. Like, I always believe in critical mass theory, right? And 80-20 rules. So building that critical mass in any new initiative is always an uphill battle. And once you get that critical mass, the increase in adoption just goes exponential. And that's what we are going through now.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the two areas of energy efficiency and energy generation. Those are two different things.
Right.
What are kind of the greatest opportunities for energy efficiency when you look at water facilities?
Right. So the biggest one on the water side, obviously, is pumps, high lift pumps, low lift pumps, and booster pumps. And, you know, in the water system, typically in Ontario, we have seen 90 to 99% on the pumps. And most of our treatment plants and our pumping stations have been designed at certain design conditions 20 years back. And what we have seen across the board in province, beside the big cities down in southern Ontario, is the population hasn't gone up. So when these facilities were designed, there was some, you know, contingency built in these systems. So firstly, the population never went up. So these pumps are designed, you know, a little bit of bigger sizes. Second, in last 15 to 20 years, there has been a lot of innovation on the technology itself. For example, in order to pump 100 liters per second, you would need a, you know, 25 horsepower pump back in 15 years ago, based on the technology at that point of time. Now you don't need that. Now you can get the same pressure, same flow by really small pump. And that's where the biggest savings are coming from, is right sizing the equipment to the current need, and also introducing the innovation. Then we also now introduced the controls, right? So first, you are right-sizing the pump, so you are getting a smaller size pump to meet your existing demand and flow. Then you are introducing a control, so your pump is operating based on the water tower level, based on the distribution flows and pressure, and all those are actually, you know, increasing your savings by multiple times. On the wastewater side, aeration systems are the biggest, and you know, we have seen a lot of innovation and improvements in aeration blower technology itself, pumps like sludge pumps, you know, screw pumps, and needless to say, the controls. So the sensors has become really advanced, very precise. So you can have a geo-controlled aeration system. And now we are even looking for ammonia-based control, which is much advanced than the geo-control. And on the digester side, you know, we have, again, the blower technology itself, then with the level sensors, you know, operating the blowers as per the level of the digester, sludge level, and controlling those, that is resulted in a big savings on the efficiency side. Yeah,
it's makes sense to hear that a lot of what is providing opportunity is the improvements in technology, right? Just taking yes. advantage of the latest and greatest that's out right. there. The other part of the puzzle is actually energy generation.
That's correct.
Not just looking for ways to save on the energy you're using, but how can these facilities actually create energy from different processes? So, yeah, what's the good stuff happening there?
So, as I said, you know, the challenge we have is that we have few very big treatment plants, and typically those treatment plants have a perfect business case to, let's say, install a combined heat and power to generate, you know, heat from waste and the power from kinetic energy in the wastewater system. Perfectly fine, working awesome. So you get a good you know, energy generation from biogas or from waste to heat recovery. But most of 80%, 85% of our treatment plants are smaller, medium-sized plants where, you know, CHPs and generators doesn't make business case. A long payback, 15, 20 years payback. So we haven't seen a lot of uptick on the combined heat and power in our water wastewater system for similar reasons. So then in what happened, again, going back to the policy landscape, around 2015, 16, the provincial government started focusing a lot on climate change and greenhouse gas reduction. And that's where we saw the synergy of having you know, biogas to energy generation, or even converting it into renewable natural gas, because government were offering some funding programs to support these projects. And suddenly now the projects that didn't make a business case started making business sense because of these new programs and new regulatory changes. On top of that, the government came back in 2016 with, organics banned from landfill, in next 10, 15, 20 years, which actually, changed and encouraged a lot of municipalities to think about how can they divert food waste organics from the landfill. And that opened a whole new territory of co-digestion in existing wastewater plants. Instead of flaring the biogas, then capture the biogas, upgrade the biogas into either renewable natural gas, or if the business case makes sense, change it to the combined heat and power units. So since last 2 years, we have been working with many municipalities to explore those new opportunities. And it's a pretty interesting stage. And, you know, other thing is also through the WEF LIFT program, I have been able to connect with a lot of operations team leads and managers down in the United States who are already doing those projects. And it's a very good platform that I have been able to fortunately share some experience with these facility and managers and operators and incorporate that in my project design and in a consultation. So this is another momentum that we are trying to create, is that using existing wastewater treatment plants, as I said, they have a capacity that they can bring in additional food waste and co-digest with existing treatment plants, upgrading the digester, that's where we introduced the innovation, because as I said, the digester technologies have changed a lot in the last 15 years. And then, you know, enhancing, increasing the biogas production, then converting it into a clean fuels is another initiative that we have been working on in last 2 to 3 years. So that's where we see a lot of energy generation activities happening now.
You mentioned the kind of focus on addressing climate change and coming from the government. And I definitely want to follow up on that a little bit and just kind of ask how much of a priority it is, you know, not for the government, but for your entity to kind of make that part of your mission.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question, Travis. As I said, we fall under the Ministry of Environment, so we have obligation to support government program, not like forcefully. We believe in those. And the fact I would like to also mention is that from the emission footprint, water, wastewater systems are very, you know, down the list, which you are aware of, because we don't have a big emission footprint. But what we found is that, you know, we can play a big role in helping the provincial government or federal government to meet their emission reduction targets for 2030 and 2050 under the Paris Agreement, right? So that's where we started exploring how we can help. Now, if you ask me from the municipality perspective, some of the big municipalities are much ahead of the game. They have announced their targets of being 100% renewable by 2030 and 2050. They have announced 75% organic diversion from the landfill by themselves. So what we try to do is that as a facility operator, how can we use this facility to help municipalities meet those goals, right? So as a municipality, most of them have two options, either to build a brand new facility that can take in organics and digest it and produce the energy, or the other option is to use the existing facility. And we all know that in doing either of these, you have to go through the regulatory approval process. And to have a new facility constructed and built, firstly, it's cost a lot, almost 3.5 times than using existing facility. Second, it takes a long, almost 1, 2 years, 3 years to get a regulatory approvals to have a new facility installed, constructed, build, and operate. Whereas in the existing facilities case, you already have a permit. You are just adding a new dimension of bringing in the food waste and co-digestion. So you already have a permit, so you are revising the permit, which will eventually take another year or so, but it's much shorter. So the dollar per investment to reduce a ton of greenhouse gas in terms of the new facility versus a existing facility is about 3 times lower. And you know, if you factor in the time and the resources and everything, it becomes 10 times cheaper. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, going back to our financial capabilities kind of thing is, you know, most of the municipalities doesn't have a luxury of spending a huge amount of money. So, you know, we are trying to provide a solution like you have this asset, let's use this asset, let's do some upgrades, let's introduce innovation. And that's where our alternative delivery models come to, right? Because we are talking about the $10 million, $15 million project. So how are you going to make the finances work? Because the government is going to fund a part of it, but still the municipality has to come with some part. So those were the alternative delivery model we came up with is basically, okay, if we get so and so from the funding, then what municipality, why don't you put X amount of money? Aqua as operator, we are willing to chip in, you know, Y amount of money. And we are also telling technology provider, okay, if you really believe in your technology and you really believe in the bigger picture of, you know, greenhouse gas reduction, organics diversion, and resource recovery, why don't you also put in some money on a performance based? And, you know, we have been able to successfully start one project in that model, which is a unique model, not a unique per se in a grand picture of, you know, design, build, operate kind of model, but for the Ontario in a context of co-digestion in the wastewater facility with the energy generation, it's kind of unique model where, you know, government is funding a part, municipality as a owner is investing, we as operators are investing, technology providers are investing, and we are proceeding with the projects.
Oh, amazing stuff going on there. You've referenced a couple times, you know, staying in touch with and keeping an eye on and collaborating with colleagues in the U.S. And I'm just really curious about any differences you see in the water sectors in Canada and the U.S. That's a very broad, open question, but I'm just curious what might come to mind for you.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference I see is the size of the systems, right? And, you know, needless to say, U.S. cities and U.S. systems are much bigger than ours. And one of the things I always go through is that when we have a technology provider come in and talk with us about various successes they have achieved down in South, when they come to us, and they kind of expect, I believe, about number of systems on a similar size. And then when we tell them that we might have five systems around the same size, but the rest of 50 will be almost one tenth of those size. And then that's where the business case goes south, basically, or doesn't make sense, Travis, is, you know, once you start sizing your technology to meet that small, medium-sized system, I believe the technology cost of the technology doesn't come proportionately down. And that's where your payback goes up. And that's where we are facing is most of these new technologies around codization, energy generation, even energy efficiencies, you know, have some limitations around the sizing. Because, you know, as and I'm not saying anything good or bad, but that's how the technologies start. They start with big markets, big adopters, and that's how their curve, you know, develops. So when they have to downsize it, and they have to develop or refine their technology to fit the smaller, medium size, the cost doesn't come drastically down proportionate to the system. And that's where the key difference in the US versus Canadian market. Second, I think, is the model of the ownership, right? Like looking at the DC system or any other systems, you know, there's a little bit of flexibility around the system, because I believe the utility owns the system. So it has a luxury to make a decisions on energy efficiency and energy generation perfectly based on the financial needs and the paybacks and the investments. Whereas in Ontario, as I said, the municipality owns the system. Aqua operates the system. Mm. So we know that this is good project, this needs to be done, but without the municipality approving the project, even though we can't do anything, you know what I'm saying? So that is kind of takes a time, because municipal government has its own process. And when you go through that process, it kind of takes a little bit longer to get approval to do the projects. And needless to say, we have 440 municipalities in the province. So that's a many number of system owners. And fortunately, we as Aqua, operating almost 60% of those systems, bring in that economies of scale, which we are able to share with a lot of small and medium municipalities across the board, in, you know, sharing the knowledge, sharing the technology cost, and also bringing in the lessons learned, so that, you know, each of these owners doesn't have to repeat the same errors every time you do the projects. So that's the biggest thing I have seen is, and also, because once the size of the municipality becomes smaller and smaller, you know, you have one person handling a bigger portfolio. So, you know, the priorities changes as per the revenue you have or the investment you're going to make. And that's where funding programs play a very crucial role in Ontario market to drive these projects.
Ah, very cool. I also want to talk to you about your background in Nepal. I haven't had any guests from there yet, and you actually can provide a lot of unique perspective. So could you talk about your time there and what you did?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So I came from Nepal. I worked about 7 years in a wastewater system in Kathmandu, Nepal, which is a capital city. With a population about almost 4 million people, you know, and it's almost a very conventional system. Although Nepal is known for having a lot of water resources, but water systems and wastewater systems are very traditional and primitive. So coming from that, where you are being a manager and a director, you're actually involved in a groundwork. You are actually involved in, you know, troubleshooting. You are actually involved in, you know, construction and all those things. When I immigrated to Canada in 2010, and then when I get back into the water wastewater sector here in 2014, that experience came really handy, you know, because you have hands-on knowledge about how the system works. But also the other thing I have to learn is, here the systems are, you have tertiary treatment and secondary treatment and all those other controls and everything. So that knowledge gap, I have to quickly catch up with that knowledge gap too. But again, being as an electrical engineer, you know, an energy person, that was very easy for me to catch up with the upgraded system here. But I forgot to say, as Aqua, we also operate a lot of First Nations systems here, about 40 of them. And, you know, First Nations are very small systems, almost similar to Nepalese system. So it keeps you prepared for that broader spectrum where you have a portfolio of a very small plant, where you have no controls, no SCADA systems, everything is hands-on. That's where, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, this is what I used to do. But then you also have a very sophisticated plants where you have almost predictive modeling and almost artificial intelligence built into those systems. And then you kind of, you know, feel so grateful for knowing and having luxury to work on a sophisticated system, and then taking that knowledge and then sharing that with rest of the half of the systems where it's you know, slowly starting to pick up those controls and everything. So that's one of the best part of my job, is that I bring in that knowledge and experience taking back from Nepal and learning here, working in a sophisticated, you know, very advanced system, and sharing that with the medium and small size clients and municipal systems, saying, oh, we can do like this, and, you know, we have done in this bigger system, we know that. So it's kind of free of charge knowledge sharing. Imagine if that medium and small system have to hire a consultant to do the same. It costs a lot of money, and sometimes we bring it that. The other thing I'm really fortunate working here, Travis, is basically getting my operations people and that knowledge of 30 years operating the system, and I always run my ideas to them, and they are the one who tells me this is gonna work, this is not gonna work, you know, and incorporate their feedback. A process specialist, SCADA technicians, and I get access to all this unlimited information and knowledge base, which makes my business or project very much successful. And as you know, I truly believe in education and capacity building, and especially in the water wastewater systems. No matter what we do, no matter how much efficient project we do or innovative thing we do, there's always a chance that the system can go back to the same old fashion of operating the next day. So you can only prevent that by training your employees and actually convincing them that this is the right thing to do. And I'm always focused on that, saying you need to make our frontline operations team believe that this actually creates a value for them, right? Not like, oh, we are doing some fancy new things. You know, they can just go back and turn off the automatic control and go to the manual the next day, and I would never see the energy savings of my projects. And coming from my measurement and verification background in energy conservation, I put a lot of focus on, you know, ensuring that our operations team and managers and operators are on board with what we are proposing, and they are fully on board on how it's going to get operated in the long run, so that my persistency of energy savings is always there and the paybacks are realized. And through that, you know, robust MNV system, employee training, education and capacity building, you know, we have achieved paybacks for our projects in last couple of years. And that actually led me to work with a college up here in Ontario to develop a training course, energy efficiency training course, targeted to our operations managers, and then get that training course for the first time, CEU approved by the director of training. Now the operations people, team members can actually take this training and get the CEUs they can use for their license renewal. And which is another, you know, proud moment for me to say, like, okay, yeah, this is another nice thing I got chance to do with my company here.
Yeah, so this has all led me to add kind of a closing question. You've always seemingly been very involved in the different water associations, whether it's a global one like WEF or your local association, and just being very involved and volunteering. And why do you do all that?
Two things, right? Firstly, as a newcomer to this country, I want to build my network, and I always believe in network building. I am a big believer of mentorship, you know, and I always have a mentor since the day I came in here. I still have the mentor. Even though I progress through my career, I still have a mentor, and I'm also involved on mentoring programs for new mentees and YPs. The second thing is that, as I said, knowledge sharing. Like, there's so much thing happening across the sector down in United States, Europe, and Canada itself. And Canada is big with, you know, provinces and territories. So the network helps me keep updated. You know, as a human being, you have so much of time, you can get updated with what's going on, right? And it kind of gives me immense satisfaction through the networking, through the, you know, social media, following people, you know, people are sharing what they have done, what are the lessons learned, and like engaging with conversation with few owners and operators in the system gives me the different perspective, right? I mean, you know, with the workload we have, with all the projects that's going on, sometimes you don't have a time that will give you a little bit of like outside of the box thought process. You sometimes get so much capped within what you are doing. And I find it like, you know, opening a window when I do these networking events and participate in this water wastewater network is through my volunteer activities, is that's the time I get to hear and listen different people's perspective and where they are coming from. And that's sometimes I'm like, you know, there has been many instances I'm like, oh, never thought about that, you know? And I find it like, wow, that's an idea. Let me think about it. You know what I'm saying? And even in mentorship, I always believe that, yeah, I might be able to give some advice to the new, you know, mentees, but I always learn from the young professional because they come up with very different ideas. And sometimes as you grow, as your workload increase and whatever you are doing, you kind of lose that, you know, off the ground, like a connections. And that's where I get from these young, we have a young workforce coming in as baby boomers are retiring. And it's very, you know, very helpful for me involved in this mentorship so that these young mentees kind of sometimes ask the questions and I'm like, that's a good question. So, yeah. And then, you know, they sometimes ask you, oh, have you heard about this? Oh, I've never heard about this. So tell me more. So, you know, you get from them too, it's not just a one way. And as I said, you know, with a lot of innovation, a lot of new things happening, I find it's a very effective way of sharing that knowledge and building the network.
Well, you've used this phrase, knowledge sharing, several times. I think that's appropriate because you just share a ton of knowledge with me and with the listeners to this podcast. So I really appreciate it. I'm glad we got to catch up and I got to hear a little bit about what's happening up there. And we'll certainly stay in touch.
Thank you, Travis. Thanks for the opportunity.
Words on water.